for the 3-2. Here it is. A swing and a high fly ball left center field. He's going to join the 500 club. Eyes on the run. He's at the track. He's at the fence. Leaps. Makes the catch.
Yes.
He took away a home run. Wow. What a play. Ramirez has it. Throws. Burley picks the perfect game. People going crazy here at U.S. Senator. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
White Sox. White Sox.
White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball, 89 WLS.
Yeah, baby, let's do it. White Sox Weekly on the air. I'm Mark Carmen. Glad to be with you today. 312-591-8900, 312-591-8900. You want to get into White Sox Weekly, because I know you do. 20 days, 3 hours, 47 minutes, and 23 seconds away from, yep, you know it, Sox Fest coming up at the Hilton Chicago, January 29th to the 31st. And of course, even more importantly, I have to say, we are about 6 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting. Doesn't really feel like that just from the fact that we haven't really had winter, but that's it. 6 weeks, pitchers and catchers going to report, and the season coming right around the corner from there. The biggest news of the week, Alex Gordon, who the White Sox were reportedly interested in to add to their outfield. He goes back to the Royals on a 4-year deal. $18 million per. It broke the record for total dollars ever issued in one deal by your Kansas City Royals. So Gordon, he probably belonged back in Kansas City. And if you've been listening to White Sox Weekly, certainly when I have been on the air, I was very supportive of Alex Gordon coming to the White Sox, first-class guy in the clubhouse, and still has, I think, a lot left in the tank at 32 years old. But he stayed with his hometown team, and you got to respect that. And I do think, because the Royals are always battling for money, and them giving $18 million to a guy who's going to be 33, 34, 35, 36, and they have a lot of young talent down there, maybe that down the line doesn't necessarily work out as well and could benefit the White Sox. We got guests for you on the show. We will talk to Ron Kittle. You love him. Kitty will be with us at 12:15. And Kirk Champion, as we'll go through the White Sox minor leagues and specifically the pitching, at about 12:35. And we will take your phone calls here, 312-591-8900, as we get it going on here, 890 WLS. The other part with Gordon leaving, that means that there are two outfielders left of interest, Justin Upton and Yoenis Cespedes. These are two players extremely similar in a lot of ways. Both are 271 hitters. Upton gets on base a little bit more. He's got a 350 on base compared to a Cespedes 319. I should say that's a little bit more than, I mean, that's a decent discrepancy, right? 350 to 319, 30 points. Cespedes has more power, but barely. 486 is slugging percentage to Upton's 473. Upton, 27 homers, as we break it down to the raw facts, or 27 homers the past 3 years on average, and Cespedes is at 28. Now, there is one huge difference, of course. Justin Upton will cost the team a compensatory draft pick for the White Sox. That would be a second-round pick. Cespedes, who has been traded from Detroit to the Mets, he will not. So those are two guys that are out there, but the money is expected to be significant. There's different reports on Justin Upton. Maybe would take a one-year deal and then bet on himself, of course, have a huge year, and go back onto the free agent market. I would assume the White Sox would be extremely interested in something like that. The other side of the coin is that he doesn't want that at all. It depends. His agent this week said, no, not taking a one-year deal. The player himself hasn't spoken directly, but there's, you know, been a lot of reports out from those in the know that he might take a one-year deal because next year the free agent market, very light, maybe Justin Upton gets paid. Regardless, if it's a long-term deal with $120, $140 million attached to it, that's got to give you a lot of pause. And I like both guys, but they both have their warts. I mean, Justin Upton, he strikes out a ton, and yeah, he was playing in a non-hitter friendly park last year in San Diego, but he hit 225 on the road. And you're talking about a guy who's a solid outfielder, good outfielder, but to commit huge dollars, it always gives me pause. So if I had to guess, I'm not sure. My guess would be that neither end up on the south side. And I'm wondering if the White Sox are taking a look at Dexter Fowler, who is a center fielder, but that would mean moving Adam Eaton probably to right. If you can play center, you can play anywhere, correct? So Fowler might be a guy who, with so many players out there, and he had a very good season for the Chicago Cubs last year leading off, he's a guy that can hit at the top of the order. He's a guy that has some power. He's a good defender. And maybe you get him on a deal that's a little bit more palatable. So that's a guy that I'm wondering if out of nowhere, Rick Hahn and company might end up with the Dexter Fowler, because it's very clear that the White Sox are looking for an outfielder. 312-591-8900. That's the phone number for White Sox Weekly. We are with you till 1 o'clock. You can jump on. If you have an opinion on who you'd like, feel free to weigh on in. And one more thing on Justin Upton. Career on-base percentage, .352. Jason Hayward, who signed for $184 million over 8 years with the Cubs with two outs and figure $22, $23 million a year. His on-base percentage for his career, .353. That'd be 1 point difference. I can do that math for you. And Upton's going to be a lot cheaper, but he's not going to be quote-unquote cheap. Tough decisions, and the White Sox, of course, have already been super aggressive. And Todd Frazier, I'm incredibly excited about at third base. Going to put a lot of thump into that lineup, and I think he's going to help in that clubhouse as well. We're going to talk to Ron Kittle next. He's a guy who had some thump in his time, the 1983 American League Rookie of the Year, 35 homers, 100 RBIs. And Kitty will be at Sox Fest, and everybody knows Ron Kittle. Everybody loves Ron Kittle, and we're going to talk to him next. 890 WLS.
Tune in to 89 WLS for award-winning news, traffic, and weather updates at the top and bottom of every hour, every day. 89 WLS.
White Sox Weekly, 89 WLS. I'm Mark Harmon. We're with you till 1 o'clock today. 6 weeks. Pitchers and catchers will be reporting. How awesome is that? Time to bring in one of the White Sox favorites. He's an ambassador, and he is your former, of course, Rookie of the Year back in 1983 at Naked Biker on Twitter, where you really, I mean, Ron Kittle, I do, when I know I'm going to interview somebody, I do a deep dive on their Twitter feed. You're eating Portillo's, you're mowing Fannie Mae mints, you got chocolate Long Johns. You're in the pool in Cancun on a White Sox-sponsored trip having pina coladas. I'm honestly wondering, does anyone have a better life than you?
You know what? It's good to be Ron Kittle sometimes. But see, what I don't post is all the other stuff that I'm doing. So that's just preoccupying my mind and trying to have some fun on all my social media calendars.
Well, let me just read one tweet to everybody just to learn what it's like to be Ron Kittle. This is on December the 30th, right before New Year's. Sometimes just sitting out in the woods, enjoying a cigar and watching the wildlife walk by is the best way to relax. Outdoors and fresh air. I mean, what a visual right there, Kitty. That's big time.
You know what? But you work hard. You deserve little times like that. And unfortunately, it was 5 a.m. in the morning. So, you know, nobody's up working at that time anyway, or it could have been late at night, which it was at that time, just trying to turn down the day for the, you know, for all the stuff that you did.
I think that's just awesome. All right, let's talk about this club as it's starting to take shape here, and the White Sox perhaps looking for an outfielder as well. But Todd Frazier, Kitty, you got to be excited about a guy like that who's going to bring some thump, play third base, and have some energy in that clubhouse. So do you think that the clubhouse kind of needed an energy guy infusion like that, or is it more just that you're excited about the production he should bring?
Well, you know, there's no doubt stuff that goes on in the locker room takes effect out on the field. You know, you need somebody to come in there and thump somebody in the head every once in a while. You know, you got Pauly Konorka, was a captain for a bunch of years. You know, I never heard the man say too many words, and I love Pauly, but you need somebody to come in there to be a little bit of a tough guy. Is Frazier the guy? I don't know, but he's a little bit more active, and you know what? He's a hard-nosed player, And those things kind of rub off on some of the other players. So I think it's going to be a good mix, and I'm excited to see the season come to start.
Who was that guy when you were playing? Like on the 83 team, who was that sort of thumping you in the head type of guy?
You know what? That was a culmination of a lot of people. I mean, it wasn't just one guy in particular. Everybody knew we were there for a mission. Greg Luzinski had his moments, Carlton Fisk, Harold never said a word. He just kind of did set by example. And Jerry Kuzman, our pitching staff, those are the guys who threw in between, had 4 days off. They sat in the dugout and just yelled at everybody. But we talked baseball nonstop, and it was fun. And I know the game has changed. Everybody takes their Nintendo to the ballpark or what are those games where you shoot everybody up? I don't even know the names of the games anymore. But
Call of Duty? Is that what you're going with?
Yeah, Halo Duty or whatever that is. That's what they do. So when I even walk in the locker room currently, nobody says much. They're just sitting at their desk or in their chair by their locker playing little Nintendo games or phone games. But back then it was a little different story. When it rained, you signed your autographs, got a hit. But when it was game time, it was time to play.
When you look back at last season, Ron, what do you think? Was the biggest issue to you not picking up the baseball? I mean, obviously the offense wasn't there as well, but I look at it like if the White Sox are more sound fundamentally on the defensive side, and you would think so many guys had down years at the plate, you pitch like you're capable of pitching, this team should be in the mix.
Well, last year's team on a piece of paper was a pretty good team, and yeah. I was shocked how poorly they played. To tell you the truth, it was lackadaisical. And I've been interviewed before, and I've said to my friends and myself that they played timid. They were going up the home plate like they were going to make an out even before they got there. And when you have that kind of attitude, you're going to struggle. And I know they care, and I know they're getting paid heaps of money to go out there and do that. But you got to go up there and if you're not swinging good, I used to tell, no matter how bad I felt, if a man was in scoring position at third base, I'd stick my neck out to get hit in the face just to bring in a run. They didn't have any of that attitude last year. When they did get hot, the other teams are already past them, and it's hard to play catch-up ball.
Ron Kittle with us here on White Sox Weekly, 89 WLS. You're talking about the mental part of the game right now, and you've done some motivational speaking. And I'm just curious, when you get young guys, I guess, who maybe they, have a dream, but they don't think it's possible to be a big leaguer. But, it's going to happen to someone, right? Like, how do you, I guess, get a kid to, kind of own, hey, man, if you really have that belief and you put in the work ethic, crazy things can happen to you in your life. Maybe it's in baseball or maybe it's elsewhere, but that you got to have the attitude to succeed.
Yeah, attitude is important, but it's also important that your parents can make you, challenge you to do certain things to be a little bit better. If you play baseball or basketball or any sports with the same five people and you're the best guy all the time, you're only going to be just as good, a little bit better than those other five guys that you play with. You got to go out there and play with the bigger boys, the better ones, get knocked around, and learn how to make yourself better skilled and wiser how to play to get better. So when you're playing lackadaisical on the field, some say for the era of shortstop, all of a sudden the next ground ball is going to come to second. The guy's thinking, man, I don't want to make a mistake just like that. And that negativity is in the back of your head. So go out there, get your butts beat, but go out there and just never give up. And I'm not saying they just turned the book and just, forgot about trying. They just, I think they lost the fight. And I think as a manager, Robin Ventura or whoever it may be, you got to go out there and challenge these guys. You're a babysitter when you're a manager, you're a father, you're a mother, you're a girlfriend, you're a boyfriend. It doesn't matter. You got to go out there and challenge these guys to get a little bit better. And if they don't, tell them somebody else is going to take your spot.
And the best way to do that is by, I'm assuming, benching a guy. Hey, listen, that's not acceptable. You will be sitting. I mean, these guys are making enough money, but everybody wants to play, right?
Oh, it's embarrassing if somebody takes you out of the lineup and not play. I mean, Tony La Russa used to joke all the time, the only reason I played is he didn't want to hear me bitching on the dugout all the time. And he goes, it's quieter when you play in the game. But that's just the attitude that we had. We all wanted to play. You're never going to feel 100% day in and day out, but you got to go out there and give it your best. And if you're struggling, you still got to go out there and root for those other guys and try to pump them up a little bit too, because everybody's going to have good and bad days.
Ron Kittle with us here, White Sox Weekly, 89 WLS. Since you brought up Tony La Russa, on my deep dive into Ron Kittle, I got a story for you. I got a friend of mine. He was a bat boy back in 1983, and he said the nicest guy on the team to him was Ron Kittle. Said you were just a sweetheart. However, on this day, Ricky Henderson steals third base. Tony La Russa has a reaction, throws bazooka all over the dugout. And you turn to good old young Rob and said, hey, can you pick up that bazooka? And of which he did, begrudgingly. But I'm wondering if right now, here White Sox Weekly, on January, whatever it is, would you like to apologize to young Rob for putting him in that position?
Oh, absolutely not. He was probably petrified if Tony was having one of his rants. Tony was notorious for carrying stuff up, but I apologize for making him pick it up. I should have made Tony pick it up. But, you know, when you're caught into the game, and Tony, I don't think there's anybody more prepared for a baseball game than Tony La Russa. There's no, I do not think anybody could ever accumulate what he has in his mind. He's 3-4 innings ahead all the time. And you got to love him. But, you know, there's a couple days I wanted to throw him around the dugout like that bazooka gun, too. But, you know, he had these gut feelings. That was his thing. And I said, it's ulcers, Tony. I said, just leave it alone. But, you know, they're there to win just like every other player. And, you know, it's just a great atmosphere for these people to watch. You know, everybody got a favorite player. Everybody got a favorite team. And everybody wants your team to win. And so do the players.
Rod Kittle will be at Sox Fest January 29th to the 31st at the Hilton. Be there. Real fast, Kitty. Everybody wants to talk about the roof shots. Maybe that gets a little old, but not to me today. You've had 7 in your career. How many of the pitchers that you hit roof shots off can you remember?
I can remember all of them. I can tell you the pitch. I can tell you the count. I can tell you what the weather was. And, you know, I can't tell you what anybody's birthday is, to tell you the truth, or I couldn't even tell you when Sox Fest was until you read it off right there. But you know what? I think everybody in baseball knows those certain things. Chris Cordaroli, you know, Mark Rosema. I hit one completely out of the ballpark over the roof. 3-2 count, game of the week against Detroit, left center field, light tower, went in Battery Park. After the game, Chet Kopech gave me the ball. He bribed the guy with one of my bats, and Chet Kopech autographed the bat for him with my signature on it. So
that's amazing.
I still have that ball to this day.
who's the only pitcher, as we question Ron Kittle about Ron Kittle, who's the only guy that you had 2 roof shots off?
God, maybe it was Murphy from Boston, if I'm not mistaken.
I see. We got you. Bobby Ojeda.
Oh, yeah, same team. They were on the same team in Boston. And matter of fact, Carlton Fisk and I went back to pack, and they quoted him in the paper, says, I never knew my arm felt that good to throw 2 baseballs a mile and a half away. And but like I said, it was fun, and I had a good time. But there's 7 of them on the roof, and that's a long way to get it up there.
I mean, it really is. 7, and the Bull, Greg Luzinski, has 4. Fisk had 2. And road-wise, Ted Williams and George Bell both with 2. So you're far and away, and obviously nobody will ever challenge that now that Great Comiskey Park is long gone. So you'll forever be etched in the record books on that one. All right, go ahead.
No, I said that's my only milestone there.
No, you have many, Kitty. What? Give me one Ozzie Guillen story from either the playing days or something over the years before you head on out.
You know, Ozzy, we were in a big game, and he's whistling at shortstop. He would, like, take his fingers and whistle, and whistle that you could, it was almost deafening. And this was, like, his first 2 years in the league. And so we went behind the mound. I was playing first base, and he's going, Ronnie. You know, and I'm thinking there's a secret play. Jeff Torpert runs out of the dugout. He goes, hey, there's a girl up in section 131 with a yellow halter top on there. Did you see her? You know, this is middle of a battle. And I thought we were working on pickoff moves. Maybe he was working on pickup lines. I don't know. But Ozzy was a great player and fun to be around.
Did you peg him to be a manager ever after he's calling you out for section 131? I mean, that's great perspective in the moment. I mean, you're competing but also seeing the girls.
Well, those are the guys that are good. to tell you the truth, if you pay attention to all your surroundings, you know, if you're just sitting there having tunnel vision, those are not the ones that do, you know, successful stuff at that. You know, like Ted Williams was just a pure hitter. I heard he was a horrible manager, and I listened to him give hitting lessons, and it was the worst explanation of hitting I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, so you need to have your head in a lot of things, but you got to turn it back forward when you want to focus. And Ozzie was good. I mean, great personality, good guy, good friend, and just love being around him.
Kenny, appreciate the time. Thanks for jumping on, and we're looking forward to seeing you out at Sox Fest. January 29th to the 31st, Rob. Put it on your calendar. It's 3 hours, 24 minutes, and 20 days from now.
I'll see you then. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Ron. Ron Kittle on White Sox Weekly 89 WLS. Always fun to talk to Kitty. We'll talk to Kirk Champion coming back after the bottom of the hour. News going to go inside the White Sox minor league, the field coordinator for the White Sox for 5 years. Now, Kirk is up next talking about the pitching that's coming on 89 WLS.
In 2016, White Sox baseball. Experience it here. 89 WLS.
White Sox Weekly, half hour to go. Pleased to have you with me on a Saturday afternoon. I'm Mark Carmen. WLS AM 890. It's 312-591-8900. About to talk to Kirk Champion, the field coordinator for your Chicago White Sox, in his fifth year getting your minor leaguers ready to be major leaguers. And Kirk is with us now. Kirk, good afternoon. Thanks for taking some time here. Let me ask you this as we start out. As you know, when you get a prospect and they get an opportunity, right, to play in the big leagues, the talent's obviously there, but the mentality has to be there as well. How, like, if you're dealing with a pitcher, how do you get a guy to say, like, hey, when you get your shot, don't come to the White Sox and U.S. Cellular Field and pitch to stay there, but, like, pitch like, hey, man, you are there because you – deserve it. You belong. This is your spot. It's not out of need. It's out of your talent and your opportunities brought you to this moment.
Well, a lot of that's just a part of the whole development. You hope that a lot of that goes on. You put them in enough pressure situations at the minor league level. You leave them out there one more hitter. You let him face that left-hander, and you know, just different things like that. When you're talking about a pitcher, if it's a position player, you grind them in that three hole where they're going to draw a lot of attention in the lineup, so they're going to face tough pitching. And you hope all of that helps them grow, but nothing changes. I mean, you get to the big leagues, it's a whole different light, and some handle it better than others, and some put more pressure on themselves than they probably should. You know, a September call-up's a little different than a guy in July in a pennant race, so all those things enter into it. But, yeah, you just really hope it's part of the player development process, and they go there and stay there.
Do you work with guys with the mental side of the game a lot?
Well, more so on the field physically, but I think that that's something that certainly enters in your mind when you watch a player's reaction to failure or when they struggle a little bit. You know, if you have to step in and help, you know, down the stretch with something, you certainly do. But I not so much like a true mental daily schedule thing, but
right.
But I think you address those issues and different players' personalities because everybody's different. There's players from all over the country, all over the world, really. And so not everybody's going to be treated the same way.
Yeah, we just had Ron Kittle on, and he was talking about how a manager is he's a mom, he's a dad, he's a girlfriend, he's a, you know, a million different things. And I mean, I'm sure in your position, trying to get guys ready to come up, you play a lot of different roles. Let's talk Carson Fulmer, you know, first round draft pick, White Sox fan, super excited about him, and 8 starts last year at Winston-Salem. Numbers looked, you know, small sample size, but strong. 22 innings, 16 hits, ERA right at 2, striking out 25 guys. What do you like most about Fulmer right now?
Well, one, he's got number one stuff. He's got the ability to pitch in the big leagues sooner than some people may even think. I mean, his stuff is some nights it's really ready, and I think that's – but his personality and his experience and what he's gone through and competed at Vanderbilt – College World Series and those things. You know, not every player in the draft gets to feel those kind of pressures and be a marked man sometimes when you know, he doesn't get to hide. I mean, certainly he's had the attention, and hopefully that's going to carry over into the big leagues for us.
And what's your thoughts? Because you hear different – you read everybody's scouting reports. They say, well, some think he should be a reliever. Some say he should be a starter. And clearly the White Sox like him as a starter. But my question is – some guys, at least back in the day, and even Chris Sale more recently, and you can go through a million names, including a ton of White Sox pitchers, who come up and they start as relievers and then they move into the rotation. Do you like that for a pitcher, just that philosophy?
Well, it's worked with certain pitchers. You know, it was a plan for Chris Sale out of the gate to start in the bullpen and then became a starter. And I think it's just really where the big league club is at the time when he's truly ready or he's needed. And if it's a pennant race and he fits in the bullpen, I'm sure they'll certainly look at that as an option. But I think, high pick that's been a starter, I think that's certainly the goal of everybody is to be a starter first, and if they become relievers, in their career or eventually, then that's determined down the road. But I think the plans are for him to start, and I think if he goes to the bullpen to get his feet wet and eventually get some starts or a spot start or a split doubleheader or something like that. It just really depends on how it falls along the way.
Kirk Champion, the White Sox field coordinator in his fifth season, which I'm sure feels just like yesterday when you started in this role, Kirk. I can feel that out of you.
Yeah, it's the fifth season in this role. It's different, but it's my 28th year with them. It's just the last five I've been field coordinator, so it's been a great run for me.
You probably know more places all across this country than maybe anyone. There's a lot of guys like you, but 28 years around the minor leagues, you probably know where every Waffle House is. I mean, the Cracker Barrel. What's the favorite?
Well, you're right. Yeah, you do some of these leagues. What's ever open after on the way home? Unfortunately, it's Taco Bell or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not always your best choice at 11 o'clock at night. But no, you know, it's funny. And you're in the higher levels, Double A, Triple A. You're usually just eating in the clubhouse and things like that. And things have gotten a lot better over the years, but I've been a lot of cities and fortunate in like 13 countries along the way too. So it's really been an exciting run for me.
It's amazing. Let's talk Spencer Adams, hard throwing righty. He's got four pitches. And I mean, last year's numbers combined between Winston-Salem and Kannapolis, 95 strikeouts, 18 walks. And this guy's 19 years old. He was born in 1996, which I think makes all of us feel old. What do you like about Spencer?
You know, it's funny, when I first saw him for the very first time, high school, small town kid, you know, just a real, real respectful, nice kid, but just really a strike thrower. Back, you could just see it in his first bullpens, and he's got some mechanical things he works on, his direction to the plate, things like that, that Kurt Hassler, and our pitching coordinator, and the other pitching coaches, blah, 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 all that work on. But he seems to put the ball in play. He seems to put the ball in the strike zone, and as he gets older and stronger and more advanced and can locate his fastball even better to both sides of the plate. Hopefully he'll be the guy that a lot of people think he's going to be.
What do you think that Tyler Danish needs to do better? I mean, here's a guy that a lot of people are high on, but yet last year at Double A, it was an up and down season. What does Tyler need to do?
Well, Tyler Danish a couple years ago was pitching in high school, and he's pitched in Double A last year. And I think that is absolutely amazing. When you look at what we put on his plate as fast as we did, and he handled it personally very well. There were nights that maybe his sinker didn't sink as well, or he couldn't get his breaking ball the outer half of the plate, or, you know, maybe a couple of things where he had some adversity stuff-wise, or things just didn't line up, or, you know, things like that. But if you just look, if you just say, hey, he's going to have finished a season in Double A out of the draft to last year, I think he's done a lot of things well. And, you know, he's another guy. Is he a starter? Is he a reliever? That sinker certainly looks like ground ball. And does he come in and do the things that some relievers have to do to throw you a double play ball? Or is he a guy that has to learn to have all three pitches? And the slider's coming, but the changeup some days is a swing and miss change. And so I think he's fine. I think that maybe we hype him too much. We meaning everybody, the fans and everybody else, want him to be so good. But I think he's fine right where he is as of now.
Why did you guys think he was ready for Double A last year? Or why did you want to get him there as quickly as you did?
Well, it's not so much want to. I think he pitched himself there. He showed that he could do it in Kannapolis. He pitched himself right off that club into Winston-Salem, and he had gotten enough innings, and he was ready for the challenge. And, you know, when it's a guy like that with that sinker and that changeup, you certainly want to find out where he's going to first hit his first wall. And he didn't necessarily do that in Kannapolis or Winston, so... Yep. You know, if he has to learn to make adjustments in Double A now, but he's still a young kid, and hopefully he'll come out stronger and more mature and better equipped to compete at that level, you know, next year.
And he's a smaller guy, and I mean, so is Carson Fulmer for that matter. And I think there's, you know, a lot of bias. Everybody wants a tall 6'4" righty who throws 95 plus, and I mean that's what scouts are looking for. I mean, do you yourself, when you're watching guys, is it hard not to have a size bias on a pitcher?
Well, you know, I think you all want Gavin Floyd's angle or something like that, you know. But I think you get who's available at the time, and you match him up to who you think can help you in the big leagues and win, and how they slot in the draft. And I don't think it's near an issue. I think years ago some organizations wouldn't take a guy if he was over or under 6'2" and things like that. I think right now you just look for guys that can get the fastball to both sides of the plate, maybe a special breaking pitch or something like that, and just see where it fits. And as you see bullpens develop like they have in the postseason here the last few years, I think you're going to see an emphasis on, you know, guys a little bit more 1-2 inning type roles if they don't profile as starters.
Do you think, well, that's interesting just to put that out there, like do you see a six-man rotation coming, or maybe even a four-man going back to it and then having just more guys who can go 1-2 innings? Because there's so much, you know, you look at a team like the Royals winning the World Series, and a part of the reason is their bullpen was phenomenal. It seems like, and starting pitching is so expensive that maybe teams are going to have to get a little bit more creative on how they go about it.
Well, I don't see a six-man. I see a six-man maybe at times you can plug somebody in that you can get that built-in rest for, give a guy an extra, if you don't monitor where a guy is inning-wise, or, you know, if he had a heavy workload, a couple starts in a row, and you want to try to find a way to get him an extra day or two. I can see somebody spot starting, but I don't know that you're going to see a six-man rotation in the big leagues, you know, with the roster spots, things like that. Yet I also don't see the four-man either. I think we're sort of in tune with the five-man rotation and the seven, sometimes eight relievers on certain series. So I think that that's where baseball is going. Yet if you're going to live and die with just two or three relievers every night, it's tough to get through a whole season that way. You can pitch that way in the postseason, but it takes almost two bullpens, two separate sets of guys, if you're going to run guys out there the seventh, eighth, and ninth every night.
Kirk Champion, the longtime White Sox contributor, now the field coordinator for his fifth straight year with us here on White Sox Weekly. Two more guys real quick here, Kirk. Number one, Jordan Stevens. I'm always interested in a guy who, I mean, he pitched at Rice, had Tommy John. Technology has gotten way good that, hey, you had Tommy John, all right, great, you're back tomorrow, or, you know, you're back next year when everybody expects you to be basically the same or even better. What do you think about Jordan's potential?
You know what? I hear a lot of great things. I've only actually got to see him live a few times. I'm going to see an off-season workout in early February in Texas that he's going to throw, and I don't have a great feel for him, but he's a quiet guy that's got special stuff, and I think, you know, it's sort of, you're cautious because of the Tommy John label, but it's not quite, you know, just getting the back of your hand stamped, but it's certainly improved over the last 5 years or so, that Tommy John's not as severe a recovery time as it was when it first happened. So combination of the things that you talked about and his stuff, you know, you certainly good things. He might be a guy we kind of stole in the draft. I mean, he's a higher pick, but he has a chance, I think, to be quiet contributor in the future.
And one guy that I'm rooting for, because I always love the underdog, Kirk, Andre Wheeler. The Dodgers make this guy a 22nd round pick in high school. That's all the way back in 2010. He was an outfielder. He goes to Texas Tech. He's a position player. Then he becomes a pitcher his sophomore year. And then the White Sox take him in the 15th round of 2013. Says, you know what? I want to play. I want to go. And I hear that Andre Wheeler is tough on lefties. Can we see this guy at U.S. Cellular Field someday?
Yeah, he's a big leaguer. I think if things continue to happen like they have from A-ball to now, he has the ability to start because he's got a decent third pitch, but there are times he can dump three or four sliders on you in a row if he has to left-handers. And so he's got kind of a combination of ways to go to get to the big leagues. I personally maybe see him more as a reliever, or maybe that's his faster ticket. But I don't think we've given up on him starting, or at least getting multiple innings along the way, and just put the workload on him a little bit more at a time. But quality kid, and I think a guy that is kind of in the mix of names when you start talking about guys in the future. He'll be a guy that has value, you know, when you look at Montas going, or just different guys that we've traded, Bassett getting traded, you know, people like that. I think Wheeler's a guy that's going to have value for us in the big leagues, or other people are going to have interest in, because he's starting to really come.
And one last one for you, because I'm such a Michael Jordan nerd to the day, and I'll always be this way. But you were with him through your travels with Birmingham and the Barons back in the day. Give us one MJ story that just kind of sticks out for you.
Well, you know, it's funny. Mike Burnett, who was our hitting coach in Birmingham in 94, I just heard him speak this morning. I was actually with him last night and this morning. He spoke here in St. Louis. I went to listen to him, and he tells a story that that was interesting to him. And I think we're up like 11-0 in a game. We were in Chattanooga, whatever. Michael hits a double, and the next pitch he steals third. And Terry Francona, our manager, is looking in the opposing dugout, saying, "Hey, I'll take care of it. Like, you're not stealing third, up 11-0." And so it was like everybody sort of freaked out because he got a great jump. And afterwards, Barney and Tito talked to him in a clubhouse, and his response was, "Hey, in the NBA, you're up 30, you try to win by 40." So he goes, he didn't even think that stealing third base was a bad thing, and just one of the things that probably hadn't experienced across the road. So Michael was an unbelievable competitor, as we all know, because of basketball. But he thought scoring runs and driving in runs, which are the most two important stats in all of baseball, were important to him, and that's what kind of made him very unique in that one-year path.
And let's be honest, the unwritten rules of baseball are just lame. If you don't hold them on, this is not Little League, this is the major leagues or the minor leagues, whatever, doesn't matter. You're giving me third base, I'm going to take it. You might disagree with me that, Kirk, because you've been in the game so long, but that's kind of how I see it.
Well, a lot of people feel the same way. If you're going to give it to us, we get to take it, and if you don't want us to steal, hold us on, hold us a little closer, and we're not just going to not try.
Yep.
And that's exactly how we go about our business. You play behind us at first base, we're stealing second. And they know it. If you don't want us to steal second, hold us on. And you know, that there are some unwritten rules, you know, some things you got to just sort of take care of. I mean, you play 162. If baseball was every Sunday, it'd be a little different mentality. But I think the fact that you play every day and you're banging around 144 in the minors and 162 in the big leagues, sometimes just some common sense takes over of not sending a guy, you know, or something like that. And I think that those things usually take care of themselves.
Fair enough. Kirk, appreciate the time. Continued success to you and great work. And we're looking forward to seeing some of your guys in the big leagues sooner than later.
That'd be great. Will you be down to spring training?
I will. I hope to be. I would love to be.
That'd be great. Well, if you do, we'll get a chance to visit then. Thanks.
Thanks, Kirk. Appreciate it. Kirk Champion, your field coordinator for the Chicago White Sox. Now 5 years, 28 in the organization, a guy who deserves some props on White Sox Weekly for all he's contributed. And hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing Carson Fulmer sooner than later, especially up at U.S. Cellular Field. Quick timeout. We will take some calls here. 312-591-8900. You want to talk about the outfield situation? That, of course, is the biggest thing going right now. You've got Yoenis Cespedes out there, who's going to cost a lot of money. Same thing with Justin Upton. And there's one thing I want to get to, too, about the Hall of Fame voting this week, and a former White Sox who absolutely deserves to be in. That's all straight ahead. WLS AM 890 White Sox Weekly.
Tune in to 89 WLS for award-winning news, traffic, and weather updates at the top and bottom of every hour, every day. 89 WLS.
White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890. My name is Mark Carmen with you for another 7 minutes or so. So we got to go quick. And I want to get in some Tim Raines thoughts in a minute. But John in Palos Hills has been hanging since yesterday, or at least seemingly the start of the show, and now on WLS AM 890. John, you want to talk about the outfield situation? You don't like my thoughts on Dexter Fowler, is that correct?
No, it's nothing personal, but I just really, as a season ticket holder and someone who's been really waiting for a team to come together in the Southside for a while, I really like the moves between last year, how Rick Hahn's turned around this team. I know some of those players didn't play up to the back of their baseball card, but and then this year, the moves he's made so far. And in a division that is easily, in my opinion, to compete in this division right now with the losses that the Royals have suffered. And looking at our pitching staff in their, you know, in their prime, not wasting a Chris Sale and a Quintana under excellent price control, what we're paying for an awesome pitching staff, I think we don't need to go just go through the motions. I think we need to go and get a legitimate guy like Cespedes, a guy that we don't have to give up a draft pick so we can still be building our farm system, and go out and get someone that we don't have any regrets. That we're going to say, hey, we went after the best guy out there. We got the best third baseman out there. We went out and got a great, you know, a good second baseman that's going to motivate our players, along with the guys from last year and our great, you know, we got Nate Jones back, Webb. We got maybe Fulmer in the bullpen. I mean, I really like the team, but we just got to go after the good players, not go after someone just to say, oh, we went and got somebody. We need to go after the best player to compete.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say the guys they went and got are players. They just went out and to say we got somebody. I mean, Todd Frazier, Sox gave up, you know, a decent amount to get him, and they're super excited about him, as they should be. I hear what you're saying, though, John. Listen, you're a season ticket holder. You're all in, and you want another impact bat in the outfield. To me, it's got to make financial sense. Their payroll's right where it was last year now. Are you going to – if the price for Cespedes is, I don't know, 5 years and close to $22, $23 million, would I do that? Probably not. I wouldn't. If I can have Dexter Fowler for 3 and or 2 and 30, 35, to me that's a little bit more lower risk, and your upside, it might not be that big of a difference. Dexter Fowler had a great year last year. I mean, he's part of a division winning they didn't win the division, but they, you know, a playoff team that won a series, and he was a huge catalyst for him.
Well, my point is your opportunity cost. I mean, you have an excellent, you're saving. You have a pitching staff that you would have to pay triple just of what, I mean, of what any other team would have to pay to get those players. And why waste that opportunity on players that could be halfway? You need to get a guy that can carry the team and make it while you have that pitching staff, because you may never have that cost control over that quality pitching ever again in the next 15 years. You're never going to see, you don't see that often.
John, it's a great point, and I completely agree with you. And I've made that point when I've hosted the show before, that listen, you've got a tremendous opportunity with Sale and Quintana and Rodon and even Fulmer coming. Now and listen, Rick Hahn is well aware of that. I mean, look at how aggressive he was the year prior, and look at how aggressive he's been in the offseason. If something makes sense with Cespedes or Justin Upton, and I'm sure they were trying with Gordon too, it seems like the White Sox have an appetite to do it, but they're not going to go completely over the top. And I don't think that's the wrong thing to do. You can't act in desperation. It's a bad long-term play. All right, quick timeout. I want to talk a little Tim Raines before we get out of here. White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890. All right, I got about 1 minute. Just want to thank everybody for allowing me back here on White Sox Weekly. Bob Grimm and everybody over at the White Sox, Brooke Boyers, Scott Reifert, and, of course, Peter Bulger and company at WLS. Also, real fast, Tim Raines had a 15% jump, but still missed out on the Hall of Fame. He has 1 year left on the ballot. Tim Raines was a great White Sox. He should go in as a Montreal Expo. This guy reached base 3,977 times. He's got the highest stolen base success rate in the history of the game at 85%. He's the only player to steal 70 bases in six seasons in a row. Tim Raines is a Hall of Famer. There's no way it should be coming down to this next year, but he absolutely, positively has to get in. And one more. From 82 to 88, he led the National League in walks, in singles, in doubles, and in triples. How is this guy not in? I have no idea, but he was a great White Sox as well, and he should absolutely get in next year. Hall of Fame voters, get it together. White Sox Weekly back next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And thanks to our guests, Kirk Champion and also Ron Kittle. We will see you next time on WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly. And starting in 2016, hear the games here. The proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. 89 WLS.